If you've been enjoying this podcast and want a super easy way to support it, you can simply find me on YouTube by searching Demon Creep. A subscription is a great help. But if you want to help the longevity of this podcast, my channel offers channel memberships for as low as 99 cents a month. Thank you, and keep enjoying the Demon Creep podcast. Hello, souls and demons, and welcome back. Today I am joined by two of my good friends, Somber Reads and Lucid Lupus. So let's start off with today's first story, called Acceptance, written by Kaiju Rider. So sit back, grip your seats, and enjoy. 4 years. It's been 4 years since the day. The day when I sat like a begging dog while holding her hand. Tears streamed down my face as I watched as she barely spoke with tubes and wires that were in a strange, cryptic cacophony around her. I remember all of the should've, or if only, the doctors and nurses spew in my face. Yet, did they even try? The most beautiful and caring woman I would ever love laid on that bed like a gasping fish on a hot summer day. Damn them and damn their Hippocratic oath. But damn to hell that disease that did this to her. I couldn't believe that in this world of vile and dread, that I couldn't keep that one source of sunshine in my life. She had been taken from me, leaving me alone in this world. I beg, plead, and eventually curse the ones above who allowed this all to happen. Why did she have to die? Why did you take her from me? Wouldn't another suffice? Perhaps one that does wrong? Why did she have to make the rest of my life casted in ever cloudy nights? For years, I felt my questions would go unanswered. But on a foggy night, he appeared. I had given up on everything that night. I couldn't live anymore without her, and like the coming storm that dwell within me, I flooded with emotions. I stood up above the rushing river water onto that rusty, rickety bridge. As I watched the water come rushing downward, imagining how my body would be carried off and cast down upon some embankment, only for later for any sort of creatures to feast upon me. As I waited for that one nerve within me to awaken, the nerve needed for me to pull myself up on the bridge edge, I heard the tapping of something against the metal bridge, and a sound that was strange, a type of whistle. It seems to be a mix of a wolf howl with that of a train whistle. I turned to the sound only to see a thinly tall man, dressed in a long black trench coat and top hat, an outfit reminiscent of a person from the 18th century. His walk was strange, and in his hand was the cane that made the tapping sound. He stopped in front of me, yet I could not see his face, for under his hat I saw nothing but blackness. Before I could speak, he rose his head slightly for the moon to light the bottom of his face. In a scruffy, unkempt thing, you might call a beard, I saw the man flash a grin. Without ever moving his head, he quickly pulled out a small black card from his coat pocket. He held the card up above before slowly bringing it to me. An eerie silence casted over us for only a minute. I accepted the card with a slight hesitation. It truly was strange as it was completely black, but when I began to move it over, it began to flash a strange neon-like color, much like a holographic card would do. I looked up to the man who continued to grin. That is when I noticed his long braid of hair that flowed into the wind. Within the darkness, I could have sworn I saw his hair flow the same neon colors. Before I could examine the man anymore, he spoke. "How do you do, good sir? I feel and see that you are one down on your luck. Is it heartache? Or perhaps is it a job? For surely it couldn't be death." He spoke in a rhyming fashion. I looked away from the man, turning my gaze back to the water below. The man's head turned with mine. Then I heard him snicker. He held up his cane, to which caught my gaze. On top of the cane, there was a small glass orb, just like a snow globe. I tried to glance what was inside, only for him to snicker again and remove it from my sight. I guess it is death. But why, pray tell, do you wish to end it? I can see that you lost someone who's dear. Then tell me, my friend, what would you do if you could see them again? I stared at the man, both confused and bewildered by what he said. Just in the moment, the orb on his globe started to glow, pushing away the fog that surrounded us. He held it forward and said, "Do you wish to see her ever again?" "What do you mean?" I asked. The man continued to grin. "Just what I ask. If you wish, I can let it be so that you can see her again." I gave a look with a raised eyebrow. Surely what he said couldn't be true. No. No, it couldn't. It shouldn't be possible. I shook my head. It's not possible. Even if you could, you must have powers like that from above. The man slammed the bottom of his cane hard on the rusty bridge. A loud bang erupted that it shook nearly the entire bridge and trees that surrounded the area. I feared that he would cause the bridge to collapse. He held up one of his skinny fingers and shook. "No. My friend doesn't go comparing me to some old fool." "But what you offer is something like that. Unless, of course, you're the devil coming to steal my soul with false hope." The man shook his finger again. "Don't lower me to some candy-giving fool. I don't offer hope, nor do I offer pain. I only come here today to offer this to you." "Then why do you offer this to me?" I asked the man. The man came closer, wrapping his free arm around me. He held forward his cane, bringing the orb closer to my eyes. "You see, my dear friend, I'm one who comes calling when someone is in pain or in dread. I wish to help them accept and move on. If you don't wish, then I bid you farewell. Yet if you do, then let me know and I'll heal you instead." "I can see my wife. Is that what you're saying?" "If that is what is needed for you to heal over her death," the man said, "then my friend, that is what I do." The man walked away from me, releasing me from his arm. He spun around his long dreadlock, twirling like snakes. I couldn't grasp what was going on. This was all too sudden. But there was something strange about this man. For though his voice was calm and collected, there seemed to be something hidden within it. Though I felt no dread from this man, there gnawed at me something that lied deeper in him. Yet even so, I did ponder. Could this man help me get over my wife's death? I glanced back at the rushing water. My first option as I muddled over the man's offer. What else could I lose? For if worse comes to worse, the only thing the man could do was kill me. But then if he did, I could be with my wife again. A horrible thought to think of, but nonetheless, it's an option. I nodded my head. "I take your offer. I mean, you saw what I was going to do earlier. What do I have to lose?" The man grinned. He lifted the orb to my eyes. I watched as a substance like snow swirled around inside the orb. As the swirling grew intense, so did a bright light. A light like that card in the man's hair from earlier. I watched in a daze as the light took over me. In a flash, I woke in bed, confused, dripping in sweat. Had everything I experienced just been a dream? I looked over at my nightstand to see a tall, empty bottle. I guess I must have fallen asleep with a drink. Before I could continue to think of what would happen, my ring alarm barred me from my bed. Reaching under the covers, I found my phone, with my alarm notifying me of my running late for work. Though, if honest, I didn't feel like going, but after that dream, I had to get my mind off of it. I got dressed and rushed out of my apartment. Making it to the street, I accidentally bumped into another person. "Sorry," I spoke in a rushed tone. "It's fine." That voice, it was familiar. I turned around shocked at who I saw. It couldn't be. It shouldn't be. That person who spoke was my wife. It was her. "Caroline?" My voice cracked with emotions. "I'm sorry, I think you have me mistaken for someone else." I grabbed the woman's arm. "No, it's you. It's you, Caroline. You came back to me." The woman shook her head, trying desperately to pull me off of her arm. "I'm sorry, sir, you have me mistaken for someone else." "No, it's you, Carolyn. It's me, John, your husband." With my wavering mind and the woman's anger, she managed to pull me off of her. "I don't know you." She took a step back into the street. I know she was dead, but she was right here in front of me. "No, Carolyn, please listen to me." The woman continued to step into the street, shaking her head. "I'm sorry, sir, you have the wrong..." Suddenly a loud truck horn blared. I and the woman watched in horror as an 18-wheeler came barreling down. It was so quick, causing me to fall to my feet. Again, I had lost my wife. That is when I heard the gathering of voices. This voice, no. It can't be. I looked around to see a crowd of people gather to check out the scene. They were all her. They were Caroline. How could this be? No, it isn't real. It can't be. I watched as the truck driver exited the truck, only to see my wife. "No," I cried. "No." I ran from the scene as I heard people. I mean Carolyn's, shout at me. I continued to run, never stopping. I couldn't believe what I was seeing. Everywhere. Anywhere, here and there and over there. Carolyn was all over the place. Shopping malls, restaurants, magazine covers, television channels, and billboards. What is this? What cruel hell is this? As I stopped to gather myself, I heard shouts come from across of me. I looked, but wish I didn't, for fear that my mind would explode at the sight. There, a large crowd of my wives gasped in horror and pointed at the fifth-story building. I heard some of them shout at whoever was at the top to not do it or to hold on. Then my heart skipped not just one beat, but a trainload. I saw another copy of my wife on the edge of the building. Before I could react, I watched as that copy jumped from the building, coming to a disgusting end. Everyone screamed and cried. I shook my head in a frenzy and ran. I ran enough, hoping to lose any sight of my wife's copies. Yet, it did nothing, and each time I had to stop to catch myself, and my mind became more shattered. As each time I saw my wife, they would each die, with every way becoming more gruesome than the next. She was shot, maimed, devoured, and other ways I will not describe. I ran and ran until my legs grew numb. "Make this stop," I cried so loud, in hopes it would shake the heavens enough for God to fall off of his throne. I wanted answers. Moreover, I wanted this to end. Dusk had rolled in when my tired legs had brought me back to the bridge. I leaned against the rust as my eyes wavered down to the waters below. My mind had gone sailing to a place where reason doesn't exist. My eyes empty as all light had vanished. Though I stood there a completely broken man, I felt in a strange way in peace of it all. How many times can you watch someone die and continue caring? I stood there staring at the water, and my hand slipped into my pocket. I felt the presence of something flat, which I pulled out, revealing the black card that man had given me. I smiled a smile that you really couldn't call a smile, and let the card fall into the rushing water below. Then again, I heard that strange whistling, turning my head to see the man had once again appeared next to me. He flashed a grin. "How do you fare, my friend?" he asked in that rhyming fashion. "Did you do this?" I asked. The man snickered. I turned my gaze away from him to face the rushing stream down below. "I guess I should thank you in a way," I said. "I've seen her die so many times, I just..." I paused for a moment. "I just don't care anymore." The man stepped over to me. He gave me a swift pat on my head. "So, with her death, you finally accepted." I nodded. The man's grin changed into a long smile. "Good. Good, my friend. Now then, do you wish to be with her?" I began to chuckle chaotically at his question. "Be with her? Be with her?" I shook my head. "I just want to move on." The man nodded. "Good, good. That's what you should do. Moving is great. It's free and welcoming." I chuckled slightly. "Yes, it is." That one nerve I asked for that night awoken. I pulled myself on the side of that rusty old bridge. I glanced down at the rushing water, seeing it soon become vibrant with bright neon colors. The man stared at me, grinning. I held a half-broken smile. "It's so wonderful, isn't it, Mr.?" I paused at that moment. "Neon black," the man spoke. "You, my friend, may call me Mr. Neon Black." I chuckled half-heartedly. "Ah, yes, I see. Or now I do see. Well, Mr. Neon Black, it's wonderful to move on. With my eyes and mind in different ways, I took that step forward. I plunged into that rushing water of neon colors. However, I did not feel the texture of waters gushing through me through a narrow line, nor did I feel the jagged rocks at the river bottom. Now I felt the soft, slimy textures of corpses I'd seen die all day, their moans and groans filling the air around me. I couldn't care less at their pain or their appearance. With bile and blood encasing me, I welcomed that embrace. For I did what I wished for in all these years. I finally accepted my wife's death.
Message to temporary employee. On behalf of the entire organization, we would like to thank you for filling in tonight. We do not doubt the offer arrived last minute, and we apologize for any inconvenience this may have caused you. Our usual night watchman had a family emergency, so you are doing us a huge service by being here tonight. On top of these expressions of gratitude, you will also be compensated 5 times the average hourly rate. The Temporary Employment Agency has been informed of these unique circumstances. Hopefully they briefed you on the agreement ahead of time. At first glance, your duty for the night may appear simple, but we strongly urge you to stay vigilant. For the duration of your shift, you will remain at the post in the reception area. Your job is to ensure that no one enters after hours. The door you enter through is the only entrance into the compound. All employees are aware the night watchman is the only person permitted in the building past operating hours. you are unlikely to run into any trouble. But we operate under the belief it is better safe than sorry. Just remember to stay in the reception area during your shift. Thank you again for filling the position. We are confident in your success. P.S. The doors deeper into the facility are chained for your convenience. You are the only person in the facility, and the chains should not be unlocked for any reasons. No exceptions. I finished reading the letter for the second time, and looked back at the key sitting on the desk. I hadn't noticed it when I first walked in because it was underneath the paper with my instructions. I hadn't tried to use it, but judging by the size, I was almost certain it fit the padlock keeping the doors and the postscript of the letter chained. With the paper still in my hand, I made my way to the doors. The majority of the reception area resembled a doctor's office, in both furnishings and sterility. There was even a stack of beat-up magazines on the coffee table in the middle of the sitting area. Saying the chain door stood out in the room, that was a bit of an understatement. They were thick metal pocket doors that, even when pulled together, appeared to have a lot of unseen surface area deep into the walls on either side. The tops and bottom of each were reinforced to the point where I was pretty sure a truck would have a hard time getting through. The handles of each door bolted and welded tight to the surfaces. A hefty metal chain snaked through both of the handles and held together by a substantial padlock. Both doors were covered in stickers reading some variation of, "Warning, door must remain closed at all times." More than a few written in different languages. For a short time, I stood in front of the massive doors before returning my attention to the key on the desk. I tried in vain to piece together why someone would say there are no exceptions to keeping a door closed, but leave the key so easily accessible. Especially someone who didn't even require a proper background check before being hired for a single night. I threw my hands up, waving the white instruction paper as a sign of unconditional surrender. It wasn't like this job had been conventional from the start. Jobs I got from the temp company usually came with information about necessary skills or a description of duties ahead of time. This offer hadn't even listed the name of the company. I hadn't heard of Homa Dynamics before walking up to the strange hourglass logo on the front door. Before reading the instructions, the only thing I knew about the gig was that it was a night shift, the address, and the obscene amount of money they were paying. Unfortunately, the last piece of information was enough to ignore the red flags. I was falling behind on more than a few bills, and making 5 days worth of money in a single night, that would let me pull my head above water for the first time in a long while. Retreating back to the desk, I placed the key on top of the instructions, folded the paper, and slid it to the far side of the desk. There was a younger version of myself who wouldn't have hesitated to unlock the industrial doors and explore a secretive company's compound. But the decisions that version of me made was why I was in my 30s working temp jobs to attempt to make ends meet. So, I was happy to sit behind someone else's desk and be grateful I had been able to pay off my data plan last month. For the first few hours, keeping myself occupied was really the only difficult part of the job. Around 3 in the morning, I had gotten bored of social media, and my battery was starting to die. I had just started flipping through an ancient highlights magazine, and wondering why any kid would be hanging out in this waiting area. and that's when I heard something. At least, I had thought I heard something. A faint slam that could have been something falling off the shelf or a door closing somewhere on the other side of the chain doors. I looked up from a spot the difference photo comparison. I was embarrassingly struggling to find the final difference and looked towards the door, straining my ears to see if there was any follow-up to confirm I had heard something in the first place. A little while passed in complete silence. I closed the wrinkled kids' magazine and made my way back to the coffee table in the waiting area. I was in front of the chain metal doors when there was another bang, either louder or closer than the last one, and unmistakably the sound of a door slamming. I stopped mid-stride and turned my head towards the chain doors. The hairs on my arm and neck at attention, and my mouth suddenly dry. In my mind, I reread the part of the instructions telling me I was the only person in the facility, and there was only one way into the building. Another extended period of total silence. But I wasn't able to shrug this one off. I could feel my heart beating in my chest, but I was feeling bold. I came to the decision that if I could get closer to the door, I might be able to hear better. If I didn't hear anything else, I could chalk it up to a door or two being blown closed by a breeze. I made my way towards the chain doors, being sure to walk as quietly as possible. Deep down, hoping if somebody was in the building, they hadn't realized I was here too. Standing below the doors, they looked more massive than my first impression. Again, standing quietly, trying to hear anything on the other side of the door. I closed my eyes in some attempt to focus more on my hearing. There wasn't another slamming door, but a few times, I thought I heard something. A repetitive soft tapping, just at the edge of my range of hearing. But it was possible my mind was playing tricks on me. I understood what needed to be done. With my eyes still closed, I carefully put my ear against the cold metal door. I kept my breathing shallow and steady, to not pollute my ears with any extra noise. And I listened. I didn't hear anything right away, but as my ear adjusted, I could tell there was definitely something making noise beyond the doors. A chill washed down my back, and I realized it was closer to me than the slammed doors had been. The taps were constant in their production, but not in location, moving back and forth around the building, sometimes getting closer, and other times further away. Footsteps. I stifled a gasp when I came to the realization. I was certain they were footsteps, but there was something off about them. There were too many at any given time to be a single person, but they moved too uniform from place to be a group of people. A cold sweat came over me when I started wondering what combination of that information could mean. I knew I needed to get away from the door and let someone know, but my instructions hadn't left any contact information. Pushing gently away from the door, I wondered if there was maybe a phone number in the desk drawer. I was only halfway through the thought when a metallic clatter directly beside me shattered the silence. I opened my eyes and looked down at its origin. The children's activity book I'd completely forgotten about, was tangled in the chains, causing them to make contact with the metal door. I clenched my teeth and hoped I hadn't been noticed. For a short silence, I was hopeful. But that hope quickly evaporated as I heard the footsteps. Far away at first, but getting closer fast. The continuous thud of far too many feet closing in directly on my location. Without breaking my eyeline on the door, I backed away from the approaching clatter, dropping the magazine that sold me out in the process. My back pressed against the exit, when the thing first made contact with the chain door. Sudden heavy pounding erupted from the other side. A moment ago, the door seemed impenetrable. But now, I watched as it shuddered with each hit. Turning to the exit, I placed my hand on the knob, but it wouldn't turn in my hand. I looked down for some sort of latching mechanism, but there wasn't even a keyhole. The realization I had been locked in from the other side hit me in waves. With the slamming getting only more intense behind me, I desperately pushed on the door with my full body weight. For a few moments, I was lost completely in my goal of escape. I was flooded with so much fear. I hadn't even registered the assault on the chain door had halted. I was still trying to force the exit open when I heard a voice. "Excuse me? Is there someone out there that can help me?" The voice spoke in a calm, disjointed manner. It sounded like it was coming at me from all directions. I abruptly stopped pounding on the exit and felt my shoulders relax. Without really thinking of why, I turned back towards the warning-covered metal doors and stood silently. I was unable to answer the voice's questions. "Thank goodness you're there, friend. It's embarrassing to admit, but I fell asleep at my desk and they must have mistakenly locked me in here." I took a step towards the large doorway, still unable to speak to the voice. But for some reason, that inability didn't seem very important. "I'm gonna guess you aren't the usual guy. I apologize if I gave you a scare, friend. Would you mind doing me a huge favor and grab that key off the desk beside you?" I continued to slowly move towards the chain doorway, but I veered a little to my right towards the reception desk when he said this, my hand hovering over the folded paper where I had left the key. "What a wild situation, right, friend? Usually I'd just wait for the workday to start, but my phone is dead. I bet the wife and kids are worried sick about me. Just go ahead and grab that key." My attention still on the door, I grabbed the paper and dumped the key into my hand. "Friend, you're a lifesaver. You'll need to stick around after your shift. The guys aren't gonna believe me when I tell them. Just put the key in the lock and let me out." Moving briskly now, I clutched the key in my hand tight enough to draw blood. My other hand reached out for the lock, before even getting to the doorway. I have no doubt I would have opened the door if I hadn't stumbled on the highlights magazine on the floor where I dropped it. The unexpected movement breaking me out of whatever hold the voice had on me. I winced, as a sudden explosion of pain entered my head. "Friend, come on now. I just need you to put the key in the lock and let me out. Don't make me wait here all night. I'm starting to get hungry." The voice sounded less casual, and now held an undertone that was decidedly less human than before. Still, I could feel it washing over me again, and I felt the need to unlock the door. So I did the only thing I could do. I lightly slid the key between the crack where the pocket doors emerged from the wall. It was easily big enough for the thin key to slide through, but far too small for my hand to get it back. An immediate cacophony of pounds met the other side of the door where the key left my hand. The large metal slab shuddering against the attack. I retreated once again to the exit on the other side of the room, but I didn't try to get through this time. It was clear that my only chance of safety was the chain doors. For hours, the thing behind the chain doors, it alternated between besieging the door with its might and silences while it recovered its strength. Each renewed assault seemed like it would be the last. The metal doors shook against its attacks, but they never gave out. After a particularly long silence, I assumed the thing was prepared for the final charge. Instead, the exit door I was pushed tightly against gave way, and I fell backwards into the early morning light. I blinked in surprise, looking up at a confused man wearing a lab coat. I recognized the familiar hourglass logo embroidered over the name tag that read, Dr. Brown. Jesus, are you still? Dr. Brown started to say, but caught himself before he finished. I mean, you must be the temporary night watchman. Nice to meet you. Maybe I should have pressed him for answers or even gotten up and punched him. But in that moment, I just continued to lay on the ground in disbelief. Well, looks like great work tonight, Dr. Brown said insincerely, while craning his neck to look at the reception area. Looks like the door is still locked. Do you mind heading back in for a coffee or tea? I was on my feet before he finished this sentence and sped out of the parking lot as fast as possible. My last memory of the building was Dr. Brown in the rearview mirror on the phone. From his body language, he didn't seem happy, and it didn't look like he had any interest in going inside.
A old traveler went missing in the mountains near my town. Don't try to find her, no matter how much they offer. This story I'm about to tell you is 100% real, and it comes from the area that I live in. My town is not rural, but it's not big, and we are surrounded by mountains. By word of mouth, there were particular places in these mountains that are forbidden places. Not because they are owned by anyone, but just because of the mystery that sprouts out from them. My city is hundreds of years old, and it has so many different cultures mixed into it, that we have a good amount of ghost stories as well. This one true story of a person who has gone missing in one of these areas is one that still scares me every time I hear it, because it makes no sense. To this day, you are still able to see the plaque of this missing person strung up on a tree off the side of an old dirt road that my family and I ride our ATVs on. On the plaque, they offer money to the person who could find her body, which is still up there. The area she went missing in, or at least the road, is called the Devil's Pass. But I'm not for sure on this. I've heard other people refer to it like this, but it may not be its official name. So let me tell you why her disappearance is so strange. She was a world traveler and had gone to every continent, so she had to have been good with maps. Also, according to her children, She had been to the destination she was trying to get to before, which was off of a paving road. Somehow, she ended up pulling off of the paved road onto an old, rocky dirt path, which leads into the forbidden territory. At night is mainly when the area is supposedly dangerous to be in, and I have only been there during daylight hours, and I never left the road. However, there is a feeling of being watched while you are in this area, and it just has an unsettling presence. Or this might just be because of all the stories I've heard behind it that makes me paranoid of it. Anyway, the lady for some reason didn't stop and just kept on going. She ended up getting high-centered and couldn't drive anymore according to the police report. Now some of you are going to say that she was drunk and that's why she kept on driving in the middle of the woods. And the police thought the same thing until the woman's daughter informed them that she had called her mother while she was driving there. Before she lost the phone signal, her daughter had told them that when they had talked, she sounded perfectly fine and that she wasn't slurring her words at all. So to continue with the story, the woman gets out of her car and checks to see if there was any way to get unstuck. It was a rainy summer night, and when the cops arrived at the crime scene, they could see her footprints. They never left the perimeter of the car also, but for some scary reason, she was nowhere to be seen. They brought out forest rangers, volunteers, and even dogs to find her. The dogs never tracked her scent any farther than 10 feet from the car. It was as if she vanished off the face of the earth. Her body's still up there, and it's been around 25 years since it happened. And yet, there's still no sign of her. The award of finding her body still stands though, which is more than $1,000. But I would never try it. That area is not meant to be gone into, let alone searched. No one knows why it's cursed in my town, but the stories date back to the early 16th century when it was first settled. I'm scared actually of sharing this story. If you talk about the area a lot, bad things seem to happen to you. I'm not superstitious about much, unless it involves this place. I was going to go camping close to that area with a bunch of friends from high school, but when I told my mom, she without hesitation said no. It was a no that didn't matter under any other circumstances because it would not change. I'll finish by saying that there are things in this world that shouldn't be explored, and this happens to be one of them.
Thanks for listening to Demon Creep Podcast. Don't forget to support the podcast by following it. The best things you can do is head over to my YouTube channel, Demon Creep, and drop me a subscription and a couple of views. Sharing my podcast or YouTube channel with your friends is a great help. Remember, growing is easier when you do it together. Until next time, this is Demon Creep, signing off.